Welcome to the HR Business Blueprint Podcast. I'm Nikki Masterman, founder and managing director of Inspired HR. In this series, alongside my fabulous guests, we will be chatting about becoming a consultant and the benefits of a licensed model. In this episode, I'm joined by Kat Moody, a solicitor at Richard Reed Solicitors. Kat has acted for private and commercial clients on matters including employment law, professional negligence, debt recovery, landlord and tenant work, and contested probate matters. Kat, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming. Could you introduce us and tell us about your journey to becoming a solicitor?
Well, that's quite a big question for that to go straight in, isn't it? Yeah, so I'm Kat Moody. I've been a solicitor for 11 years. Originally started interest in law when I turned 16 and decided what I wanted to do when I left school. And it was quite a big decision because I didn't come from a family where there were people in really any kind of job, really. I came from a long-term workless family, grew up on benefits. I didn't know any professional people, but I did love Ally McBeal, which does sound very cliche. And I know when we've spoken about it before, it always gets a laugh. But genuinely, watching that show, I really started to be interested in law. I wanted the power suit. I wanted to kind of work in an office. And so that's what I decided to do. So really, it started when I was 16, went to college, university, and then law school. But I think really, I didn't realise how difficult it would be to qualify as a solicitor. Nobody really told you when you were at school that it would be so hard. And I think I was quite naive, thought, just go and get all of the qualifications and then someone will give me a job, which obviously didn't happen. So when you're qualifying as a solicitor, when I qualified, it's different now, but when I qualified, you have to get a training contract, which is kind of like an apprenticeship with a solicitor's firm. And they're like gold dust. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to apply 2 years in advance to get a job. And nobody told you that at university either. So I was just going about day to day thinking I'll get the qualification and at the end I'll just go and apply for a job. So I was a little slow to the mark there. But yeah, lots of applications, plenty of rejections, which really makes you feel great about yourself. And then eventually applied for a job at Gateshead Council. So I became a paralegal there first, got lots of experience working in debt recovery, which was really interesting. I'd never done anything like the work that the council was doing at that point. And then I eventually got a training contract, which was probably one of the best days ever, really, when you get that notification that you've actually been accepted for your training contract. I remember just being absolutely overwhelmed that it eventually happened. And this mm-hmm. was years and years later. So I did a training contract with the council and the police, which was really interesting. And then I eventually qualified in 2013. So I started when I was 16, you know, and it took until I was 30 to qualify as a solicitor. Wow. So I'm 41 this year and it feels like it's been a bit of a roller coaster of a journey, but one that's been really fulfilling because I think all of that determination, the rejections, the late nights, the, mm-hmm. you know, working two jobs, three jobs to pay for university was all worth it because I actually really love being a solicitor. So it was kind of a roller coaster, but we got there in the end.
And it is a fabulous story. I mean, it's not the first time I've heard it. Mm-hmm. I remember I was just completely inspired by your story. You are an inspiration to anybody that comes from an underprivileged, non-working background where you really can achieve your dreams if you work hard and put your mind to it. And I've done similar, but I went the non-academic route. So I'm qualified by experience. So we both have very similar stories. But you're right, it's hard work. And we should be absolutely proud of what we achieved. And, mm-hmm. and you and I are both testaments where you can build the life that you dream of through curiosity. And yours was having that dream. Mine was very much about curiosity and wanting to learn mm-hmm. about employment law. So you really can achieve anything. And it's a fabulous story. Out of curiosity, how did your family react when you qualified as a solicitor and reached your dreams?
I remember calling my mum, and my mum was absolutely, you know, she was standing in King Street in South Shields, apparently, in the middle of everybody. And she cheered so loud when I rang her and she said that people were kind of staring, you know. But yeah, I think everyone was really pleased that I'd managed to do what I'd kind of set out to do. But I think because I didn't really have that role model, I didn't have a professional person in the family that I looked up to. You know, I grew up in a single parent family. I'd spent time in foster care with my brothers, just on a few occasions, but we didn't have the typical background. So I didn't really have many people championing what I was doing or kind of really being supportive in that respect. And I suppose largely, no disrespect to my family, but they didn't really quite understand the process that I was going through or how difficult it was and how competitive it was to get the job. So whilst everyone was really pleased that I'd got it, I don't think really they quite understood how difficult it had been to get there and what it actually meant. My husband, Phil, was just absolutely made up because he had seen me all the late nights, all the stress, the kind of pulling your hair out, imposter syndrome, thinking, God, what have I started? Am I actually even going to achieve it? And he was so proud that I'd actually done it. We had a big celebration. It was a great moment that I'll always treasure because it validates what you were doing and what you set out to do. And it makes you not, at some points I felt, you know, is it, should I quit? Or, you know, or have I bitten off more than I can chew? Is this actually going to, you know, what will I do if I don't qualify as a solicitor? I've spent all this time and money. So yeah, it was such a relief and everybody was really happy.
Yeah. I mean, you should be absolutely proud of yourself and I'm sure your mum is. What would have been your plan B if it hadn't quite worked out for you? Did you ever get that far?
Well, there are other routes to qualify to become a lawyer. So at that time, if I hadn't have qualified as a solicitor, I could have went down the Silex route and qualified as a legal executive, which, you know, solicitors and legal execs are both lawyers, do very similar work, and it would have just been another route to qualify. But there was a moment where I thought, you know, if I don't qualify as a solicitor, all I wanted to do was law. So I couldn't really quite grasp what I would do. It was kind of, it would always be something in law, just the route to get there would have been slightly different. I mean, when I was applying for training contracts, the job that I was doing at the council was on route to qualify as a legal exec. So I'd kind of already started that as a background plan B. And then thankfully I was able to get the training contract. But I think if I hadn't done either of those, the ultimate dream would have been, it's completely left field, to open a coffee shop and a bakery, because that's actually when I'm not cat at work, I'm baking and I love kind of socialising. So actually that's the plan C.
Fantastic. Okay, but you did get there and you should be ultra proud of that. So obviously we work together in an employment law capacity. What is it that you love about employment law in particular?
It's so varied and you can see a real difference from the moment that you're involved, whether that's with an employer, giving them advice about the prospects of successfully defending a claim at a tribunal, or whether it's speaking to an employee who maybe has suffered some ill treatment at work and you discuss it with them and they realise they have options or they feel heard. They feel like what they're saying's happened actually shouldn't have happened, because a lot of the time there's uncertainty around employment law and I don't think everybody really fully understands what, as an employer, what you should do and what you can't do. And employees don't always fully understand what they're allowed to do and vice versa. So it is quite nice where you get in from day one, you feel like you are making a difference.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that because we've talked about this. I have actually been on that employee side with a previous corporate employer that I've discussed before, where I did take them to tribunal on the back of being treated not so well following maternity leave. And I actually wish I'd actually known you at that point, because the solicitor, who shall not be named at that point, didn't do a great job for me. And they actually encouraged me to take off breach flexible working from my ET1 because they completed it for me. And I remember I ended up throughout the process really feeling like the time just wasn't going into it from them. So I actually bit the bullet and represented myself in court. And it was really tough, but I saw it from the other side, you know, mm-hmm. and it was a 3-day hearing. I nearly walked out on day two because I'd been cross-examined and questioned everything in my head and all my evidence, but that's what they're there and paid mm-hmm. to do. So I've experienced it from that side as well. Yeah. And, you know, I wish I'd known you at that mm-hmm. point, because I know you really fight for mm-hmm. the people that you represent. And this is one of the reasons I work with you.
I mean, that's why I love being a lawyer, because you do get to fight. I mean, you know, if you can't represent yourself, then you've got no business representing other people. So my whole background's kind of been fighting, being a bit of the underdog.
Yeah.
And so that leans to a strength, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, just as you've represented yourself, I remember being 17. I used to work in a pub and I was unfairly dismissed from the pub. We'll not get into the details, but it was just a complete drama. And at that point, I was studying law. I was still at college, and I thought, you know, I'm going to do something about this. So that was my first kind of exposure to employment law. And I remember going to Citizens Advice, and I said, you know, I don't care that I'm only 17. I want to sue this yeah. this pub. And in the end, they ended up being able to get me a settlement agreement. I mean, I didn't, at the time, I thought I had really won big, but I didn't actually get any compensation or anything. It was more the principal that they had to, I think they had to apologise to me and they had to give me my P45 and holiday pay or whatever. But at the time, I thought, I could do this.
Yeah.
You know, that was like the first glimpse into, you can make even just a small change for yourself can have huge consequences later down the line, because that was the first time I probably stood up for myself.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, and it definitely, having a solicitor in an employment tribunal or throughout the process as soon as things become contentious is absolutely in everybody's better interests, because they're the people, we're the people that know the law, we know the legislation that you're supposed to apply to, we know the procedure that mm-hmm. you're supposed to follow when you go to a tribunal. And if you're a litigant in person, if you're doing it all yourself, it is difficult, and the courts aren't always lenient. Just because you're unrepresented doesn't mean the judge is going to take pity on you or allow you extra time or give you extra permission to maybe file evidence late or not follow the procedure. So, mm-hmm. and that works for employers and employees.
Yeah.
So it is important not only to have an employment lawyer, but also to have the representation of a HR professional, because they're helping you with the internal procedures mm-hmm. to make sure that you've really mitigated the risk. So if you are being sued, you've done everything that you should have done to limit the possibility of losing at a tribunal.
Yeah, and obviously the solicitors and lawyers and HR consultants work so well together. It's quite interesting that you mentioned the bar, because that happened to my daughter mm. when she was working in a bar. And he kind of called it a day and then told her she isn't entitled to a holiday pay because she was a 0-hour contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can imagine the email they got from me, unlawful uh-huh. deduction of wages. She'd also slipped and smashed her phone. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, the money was in her account the following day once he yeah. received an email from me. Didn't I mean, even need to go to work.
It pays to know people who are lawyers or HR, because we all, or the majority of us, work or are exposed to business at some point. And the rules of employment law apply to us all. And so it is worth knowing somebody who can, you can just kind of have a conversation with, pick their brains a little bit to find out if what's happening to you should be happening.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is definitely an interesting area of law as well, because no two cases are the same.
No, they're not. And I know we often talk different cases and things mm-hmm. that are coming up. I mean, obviously, for those listening, we would never talk names of clients or anything mm-hmm. like that, but we just talk about cases in general mm-hmm. and experience. So we work really well together, Kat. We've worked mm-hmm. together for a number of years now. And, you know, I've got huge respect for yourself and the mm-hmm. firm that you work for. And, you know, when we have an individual come to us, we cannot represent individuals mm-hmm. because, as we know, for an individual to be represented by a HR consultant, they must be FCA regulated. That's something we choose not to do. In fact, I only really know two of them in the UK, because there's not that many. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was where HR consultants got caught up in a bit of a trap around financial regulation when some changes came in around mortgages and financial companies. But unfortunately, it caught up HR consultants mm-hmm. as well. So when those individuals come to us, we obviously direct them to yourself. because it's something that we don't undertake. And then obviously if we are dealing with a settlement for one of our clients, we work really well with you where we mm-hmm. would recommend you guys. Obviously we are very ethical in the way that we work. We recommend because we respect the quality and the standards we both deliver with each other mm-hmm. rather than because we make money from each other. We don't. We never operate that way. That, you know, that's unethical. For us, it's about respecting the service and the quality and the standards and that both parties know what they're talking about when we do that. And it certainly led to some interesting conversations between us when we've ended up on the opposite side of mm-hmm. the table. But we both know that we talk from a place of knowledge, experience, and that if we're challenging or pushing back, we're doing it because we've done a good job and we've done it right. And we both have that very much high level of respect for each other.
Yeah, and that is important. I was going to say there that is important, that it's not always about agreeing with the person that you're working with or collaborating with. It has to be very much a case that you can put forward your point and opinion, and equally you can to me, mm-hmm. and it's respected either way. We don't always have to agree on it. And I think that's what's, I mean, although the law is there and written down, it is open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. And so I might interpret it very different to how you might be interpreting it, or how an employer or an employee. And so it is often cause for conversation and debate, healthy debate, mm-hmm. so you can kind of really understand it from all angles. Like when we've done our online webinar series, giving people information about employment law changes, the last one we did, it was, you know, mainly a conversation. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were some points of that where we were both kind of looking at it from different angles. And that's what's interesting about it.
And that is interesting, because obviously there is a real misconception that solicitors and HR consultants do the same job. But we actually know that really not to be true. Mm-hmm. That isn't the case. So how would you describe the difference between what you do mm-hmm. and what we do?
Well, I think the biggest difference is HR consultants are there to kind of manage the employee throughout the whole process, mm-hmm. hire, fire, everything in between. So you're looking at, you know, drafting contracts, holiday pay, disciplinaries, grievances. Mm-hmm. HR consultants, a good HR consultant like yourself, Nikki, is someone that will go in and be able to take the pressure off the business, the employer, and manage the employees for them, mm-hmm. providing handbooks, policies, procedures, explaining how, in practical terms, they operate. Mm-hmm. Whereas an employment lawyer, my job is to explain the legislation, explain what the law and regulations are, so that when the policies and procedures are being drafted, they're drafted in accordance mm-hmm. with the law. My job is to assess prospects of success. Mm-hmm. If an employer is being potentially sued by an employee, they would come to me so I can say how likely it is that they're going to win or lose. Mm-hmm. That's something an employment lawyer would do, applying the law, rather than a HR consultant who may give them an indication as to what they think, but from a kind of legal opinion, that's where the employment lawyer would step in to provide that. And it's the same with settlement agreements as well. Mm-hmm. HR consultants can draft the settlement agreement for you and absolutely give the employer advice about how to negotiate the terms to mm-hmm. suggest how best to manage the employee's expectations. All of those things are behind the scenes. The employer then gets in touch with an employment lawyer who doesn't speak to the employer necessarily. We speak to the employee, discuss that with them in a confidential setting, and make sure the employee knows what they can and can't do if they sign a settlement agreement. Mm-hmm. And so although the two roles are different, they only work well when they run together. Mm-hmm. And so it is important to have, you know, I always recommend Inspired HR to anybody who needs an HR consultant mm-hmm. because I want to know that when it actually comes to me being involved, that the risk of something going wrong has been mitigated. And that only happens when somebody is, you know, well experienced as yourself, comes mm-hmm. in and makes sure that everything's kind of, all the paperwork's there, you've dotted your I's, crossed your T's, you've got everything. There's a full audit trail. People understand, there's training. Mm-hmm. Because when those things don't exist, it's more likely that the employer will lose at a tribunal. And so the biggest difference is really you're dealing with the internal mm-hmm. procedures and trying to mitigate risk, and then I'm dealing with it when something goes wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, people, when they ask me to explain it, I say, well, basically, we do the day-to-day job. We do it on the ground. We know what reality looks like. We deal with the emotions. We deal with the frustrations. We hold the hand through it. And we encourage best practice and we advise and we provide all of the tools that they need to do it. They don't always listen, as we know. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they're like, no, I'm not doing that. And, you know, we're seeing a bit of that at the moment with all of the legislation changes coming back and coming into play, and you know, there is frustrations for some of the SMEs, but basically our job is to try and mitigate the risk, hold the hand, make sure it's best practice and it's tied up in a pretty bow. Your job is to make sure that bow is tied, and if it's mm-hmm. not, how do you fix it? And that's how we work so well together. Tell me, why do you think HR consultants should work with an employment solicitor and lawyer?
Well, if you build that rapport with an employment lawyer, you build up the trust. So if your client does have a problem, you're more likely to feel confident in recommending an employment lawyer if you're working closely with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will know day in, day out what that employment lawyer is capable of doing. And also the kind of approach they take to dealing with issues. You already know ahead of speaking to me what I'll be looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You're already aware that I'll be saying, have you done X, Y, and Z?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll know that. So working closely with an employment lawyer gives you the insight, I suppose, behind the curtain, really, mm-hmm. to see what the other side is doing and what we're looking for, because then you can apply that on the day-to-day basis. So if you don't work with an employment lawyer, you can absolutely still refer to an employment lawyer. But what you don't have is that you haven't built the trust. So then you mm-hmm. really don't know what they're capable of and kind of if they'll be able to manage your client's expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the other thing. You've built up this relationship with your clients.
Mm-hmm.
You want to ensure that whoever you refer them to is somebody that is going to understand them and get their business model, understand what they're trying to achieve. And that's only really possible if you trust the person that you're dealing with on a regular basis.
And that does carry benefits, because every time, you know, we know something has got the risk of escalating, myself and Jenny, my head of consultancy, will often talk our complex cases that we know could escalate. And quite often we do go, what would Kat think? What would Kat look mm-hmm. for? What would Kat say? And even if an individual chooses not to work with you, because it's not mm-hmm. ultimately our decision, yeah. it's our clients, they may have their own preferred solicitors, we still know by knowing what you would look for that it's mm-hmm. at a high standard, because we're already covering mm-hmm. that off. So it really does carry a lot of benefits for HR consultants. What kind of work most commonly occurs between consultants and employment lawyers?
Absolutely, settlement agreements are a regular occurrence. And they're actually, I feel from the work that's coming through recently, they seem to be on the increase. And quite often it'll be a HR consultant that's drafted and advised the employer on the terms of the settlement agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would be involved either directly with the employee contacting me, or quite often through a HR consultant getting me involved. So settlement agreements are kind of an everyday occurrence or mm-hmm. thereabouts. But also the other kind of cases are when there's the real possibility that an employee, there might be an issue that's caused from an employee exiting the business.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be because they've voiced concerns, they've raised grievances, they're likely to issue a claim. And so a HR consultant might get in touch to discuss what the likely risks are, what are the likely prospects of success, how can we manage
mm-hmm.
this going forward. And recently I'm noticing that's more to do with disability discrimination,
yeah.
discrimination for neurodivergent employees and sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few things that seem to be, from my opinion, on the rise.
And we've seen the same thing this year. We've never had a year like it around conciliations and settlements this year. And 90% of them have been around disability, neurodiversity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, thankfully, we are a business that specialises in that area, and we work with a lot of big businesses on the back of that specialism now, because it's something we can take off their hands. And we are seeing that HR consultants and HR teams need to start educating and getting trained in neurodiversity and what's expected, because they're on the back foot with it at the moment, which is, I mean, thankfully, we have that knowledge, and I live with it in my family, and you know, so does my team. You know, we're all very, very high from a knowledge point of view on this, and mm-hmm. work with some amazing partners. But we're seeing a lot of internal teams just don't have the knowledge. And I had a conversation earlier this week with a big company that, when I got talking to them about neurodiversity and things to consider, they were like, oh, we hadn't really thought about all of that. Can we have a discussion? And we're like, yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, anything we can do to help you. So it really is on the rise. And interesting you mentioned there about sexual harassment and sex discrimination, because there has been a number of legal changes. Obviously, we've got the prevention of sexual harassment in the workplace. Mm-hmm. I do think people are underestimating the risk around that. For us in particular, I was discussing with Jenny this morning on my way here, and we were discussing, are people taking it as serious? Mm-hmm. Are they realising the risk around it? So there's a lot of changes. I mean, we know that Labour are going to be announcing the Make Work Pay, but it really has seen a lot of changes, and we're obviously due to hear about a lot more. What do you think mm-hmm. the biggest challenges for consultants will be with all the changes?
Managing expectations of clients, really, because like you say there, with the prevention of sexual harassment in the workplace, although there's, you know, you go online and there'll be articles that have been published, there's people are hosting talks and it is in the media, but I don't think people, like you say, are really understanding how significant, even though it's a small change, mm-hmm. it's a significant change, because actually there is real repercussions for employers who don't take preventative steps to ensure that their employees are not sexually harassed in the workplace. And I think when people think about sexual harassment, they default to the stereotypical kind of inappropriate touching, very more geared towards one sex than the other. And actually, it's a whole range of inappropriate conduct, mm-hmm. words, actions. It extends, and it's not just in the workplace, and it's mm-hmm. not just with colleagues on colleagues, it's third parties who come into your business. It's what do you have to do, you have to consider when you're sending your staff off to an external event, mm-hmm. when you're hosting training, you know, the whole thing about wherever you're interacting with somebody in a business sense, you really now need to be thinking, what are the risks to your employees? And how do you mitigate those risks to avoid mm-hmm. sexual harassment? So that's about introducing a zero tolerance policy mm-hmm. for sexual harassment, making sure people are signing up to terms and conditions to say when they interact with your business, that's what they're agreeing to. Mm-hmm. It's about having that disclaimer on any events that you run. So when people are purchasing tickets to come to events or attend training, they're saying that they know you have this zero tolerance mm-hmm. policy, and they will be, you know, removed from the training session or the event if they don't adhere to it. So I think employers, the biggest challenge really for HR consultants is making sure employers understand the full extent of the changes in law. And obviously mm-hmm. the sexual harassment one is just one, but it's about managing expectations really. And mm-hmm. I think that can be tricky, because especially if you've got a small business, and rightly so, an employer might be thinking about the costs involved of enforcing changes, and or they might think, oh, we're only a small business, it won't affect us. And I think the difficult job for you is convincing them why it matters.
Mm-hmm. And we are seeing that. I mean, there's assumption of, oh, yeah, we'll just run a bit of training. We're like, no, your mm-hmm. policies need updating. Clauses need to go into your agreements with third parties. Mm-hmm. You need to make people aware of your zero tolerance. You need to have the risk assessment in place. People are underestimating that the training also has to be bespoke to the sector. Mm-hmm. They're thinking just generic training. But we both know, put that one in front of a judge and they'll go, so what's so bespoke about it? You mm-hmm. know, and then, you know, we're talking about, you're probably looking at refresher training annually on these mm-hmm. things. And, you know, there is a lot of underestimation. I mean, we see it because we live it and breathe it, but there really is some eye-opening that needs to happen out mm-hmm. there at the moment. And again, like anything, we can only advise them. It's a little bit like you can lead a horse to water, mm-hmm. but you can't make it drink.
Yeah.
And we can only advise them on what they need to do. So with HR professionals, what's the best way for them to keep themselves up to date, do you think?
Well, very much the same as an employment lawyer. It's about going to the training session. It's about signing up to newsletters, websites that give you updates, keeping abreast of the law and the changes. You have to have your finger on the pulse, because things change so rapidly that if you're not up to date, then you're going to fall behind very quickly. So a lot of solicitors will run webinars, a lot of barristers' chambers will run webinars, and they'll all be for free. There's lots of free training out there, and it is about making sure you're ahead of the curve and collaborating like we do.
Yeah.
Because I might have heard of something or experienced something that you might have not came across, and vice versa. So it's about kind of widening the net. Mm-hmm. So that actually within your network, your business network, you've got a real range of different people that you can bounce ideas off, and that's the better way to work, really. That's certainly how I feel like I keep on top of things more, mm-hmm. because I feel like you can learn from your peers.
Absolutely. I mean, I learn loads from my peers, and I know the webinars that you and mm-hmm. I do, and quite often the events that we do together, we actually have quite a lot of other solicitors mm-hmm. and HR consultants and HR professionals come along to them because they know we have a really good relationship mm-hmm. and, you know, we always have a really good debate, and we do both keep ourselves very up to date on what's going on in relation to these things. And I'm really lucky that as I've moved into the license model this year, that I have got you there to support mm-hmm. not just me and my team, but also the licensees as they evolve. And, you know, I've got a great partner in place for them, which we're very privileged to do. And there will, it will be their own business. They will have the opportunity to put their own localized partners in place as well, because some of them may not be local and they may need face-to-face. But I'm absolutely over the moon that I've got someone like yourself and Richard mm-hmm. Reed solicitors in Sunderland, where they really have got the back for our clients and ourselves as well. So if there was one final thing you would like to say or share a tip on, Kat, what would it be?
It is about keeping updated, really, because if you're prepared, whether you're an employer or an employee, if you're prepared, you understand your rights, you understand what you should be doing and can't be doing, then you're much more likely to be ahead of the curve when something or if something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's about not only keeping abreast of everything that's changing, but listening to the professional advisors, listening. You don't always have to accept what we're saying, but at least listen to what the lawyers are saying, listen to what HR consultants are saying, mm-hmm. and embrace change, because it happens all the time. And a successful business will evolve with the changes that come in with the law. Mm-hmm. And those that don't embrace change will fall foul to the law and end up with significant costs in a tribunal.
And I think we will see that. I mean, with all of the changes coming with the Make Work Pay, it's very much a heavily debated conversation between mm-hmm. us all at the moment. I'm not going to deny, from a HR business point of view, it's great for us from a business and commercial point of view, but we're also commercially savvy enough to know that it's going to be tough on the SME market that mm-hmm. don't necessarily have the funds or the team or the time to do it. And it is going to be hard. And we know that will lead them to bending rules or not following the rules. And then we'll all be picking the pieces up on that. You know, so from a business point of view, for a small business, it's going to be tough for them. So thank you for coming on the podcast today, Kat. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I always do. Where can listeners go to find out more about Richard Reed Solicitors?
Well, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it. And it's always great to have a little catch up. And just what I love most about it is that although there's not everything we agree on, we are certainly on the same page. You know, we're coming at it from the same kind of positive mindset with the intention of really helping people, which is really lovely. In respect of Richard Reed, as you've said, we're based in Sunderland. You can access more information on our website. We're on all of the social media platforms. Lots of articles are published on LinkedIn, so you can connect with me on LinkedIn and with Richard Reed as the firm. And yeah, online we're about. So, and if anybody wants to speak to me, you know, we can share details.
Mm-hmm. We do. And, you know, we both do offer free initial mm-hmm. conversations and consultations. So, you know, we both offer that, and we recommend that when an individual comes along to us. So thank you for joining me today, Kat. It's very much appreciated. Thanks for listening to the HR Business Blueprint podcast. For any information on what we've covered in this episode, head to the show notes. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. See you next time.